Foundation presents The Doctor Is In. You've got questions? He's got answers.
On my mantle at home are two American flags fold neatly into triangles. One is my dad's, who was in the Navy in the Second World War, and the other is Rex Scott's, my namesake. And these, I believe, were men of honor.
You don't hear that phrase very much anymore, Rex.
Yeah.
Men of honor, honorable men. People have, for centuries, have talked about how precious their honor is. When you say they were men of honor, what do you think of?
I think of no matter what the cost, they will do what's right. No matter if somebody's looking or not looking, they will do what the right thing is according to them.
So they're essentially virtuous people who are just people, and that certainly is a component of honor. To understand the peculiarity of honor, because honor is a word that usually you use in quotation marks, like so-called honorable people.
Okay.
It all starts with Shakespeare, with the great speech of Mark Antony about Brutus. Well, Brutus was an honorable man.
Honorable.
And throughout, he keeps on upping the ante until finally they're calling for Brutus to be murdered in the street.
Right.
Now, one of the ways I always look at things, I look at the word itself. I mean, I just posted a piece by Clyde Wilson, an excellent piece on our website, in which he talks about the language of some of the American founders. They refer to the American genius.
Oh.
Well, and they didn't mean that Americans were smart. What they meant was the prevailing character. And I suggested that we also could look back at the original meaning, which is the genius for a Roman was a guardian spirit of the head of a household.
Hmm.
So here, the Latin word honos, or the later Latin honor, meant something like your public reputation, what people think of you.
Okay.
It also meant dignity or a public office that you had achieved. And so at Rome, politicians refer to the cursus honorum. Mm. A cursus is a course, a race course. The cycle of honors starting at a certain low level at, you know, aedile, quaestor, praetor, and then eventually consul. And so these honors are actual ranks you hold.
I see.
It's based on your public reputation.
So it's what people think of you, even in spite of what you really are?
Well, that's one aspect of it. You know, we'd like to think that, well, I'm a man of honor and I don't care what people think.
Hmm.
In truth, almost no one is like that. Jesus Christ was like that. A few saints were like that. A few great warriors were like that. But mostly, we think about what other people think.
Yeah.
It's also, for honor, it's also a bit, it refers to what we think about ourselves. In other words, do we think of ourselves as honorable, just, fair?
Okay.
Dr. Johnson, in his great dictionary, and Dr. Johnson is one of the most deep thinkers about morality that the English language has, he distinguished between honor as public reputation or dignity or high rank. And that's, he says, that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But we also use the word honor as something objective. And he, nobility of soul. He uses the word magnanimity.
Magnanimity.
A scorn of meanness. Magnanimity, of course, means greatness of soul.
Oh.
And so people who rise above petty problems and do the right thing. I may be hot, I may be tired, I may have the flu, but I'm going to get up and do the work that
right.
I promised
get it done.
Somebody I would do. I had a wild friend when I was my first year in college named Billy Reynolds, and he'd say, well, you know, let's drive to Florida, let's do this. And I said, well, Billy, I don't have any money, and your car doesn't have any gas. And he says, baby, I don't sweat the small stuff. But the thing is, Billy Reynolds' view of himself was a man who rises above trivial questions. Honor, therefore, in Johnson's second definition, it entails a high moral character, and that person of honor is aware of this and lives up to it.
Okay, is there another word we could use for that second definition? What would that be?
Well, I've already used magnanimity.
Magnanimity.
Greatness of soul.
Right.
Self-worth. All of these things, which, by the way, are often troublesome to a Christian because Christians don't especially esteem greatness of soul. Thomas Aquinas has a lot of discussion of this, in which he rescues the word and says we can use it in a Christian sense. But if you want, at some point during this discussion, we could talk about a Christian sense of honor, because if you talk to some people, they'd say, well, that's not appropriate. Christians are meek and lowly. How can you have a sense of honor? But in fact, that's not really
true. Well, these two definitions, this magnanimity and greatness of soul, how are the two definitions relating?
Between public repute and greatness of soul.
Okay,
well, a man of honor has a reputation to defend. Precisely because he is an honest man. He is the man who fulfills his commitments. He does not flinch from conflict, from opposition, from obstacles. He simply puts his, when the going gets tough, the tough get going.
Yeah.
Well, that's one aspect to what a man of honor does. He acts in such a way as to deserve and maintain the respect of people who are entitled to give respect. Now, that isn't everybody.
Yeah.
That isn't everybody. So, for example, let us suppose you're Douglas MacArthur or General Patton, and some little creep says, oh, you're just such a big shot. I don't really care. Well, you don't pay any attention to it.
No.
Or the creeps in the press. A man of honor doesn't care about those people. What he cares about is his peers, and by I don't just mean people of the same rank or the same wealth or the same power, but people on the same moral plane, other men of honor who are entitled to pass judgment
on you. It's a bit abstract. It's like talking about beauty, but I mean, through the ages, there must have been changes in what honor meant. Men of honor were different type of honor than today's honor?
Like all other human institutions, there's a universal aspect to it. Like, for example, the sexual attraction and even marriage are universal. Marriage can take many forms, and some of the differences are quite subtle. But still, the idea of one man and one or more women in a long-term relationship to bring up children, that's the foundation, the natural foundation of marriage. So the natural foundation of honor is that people worthy of respect demand respect.
Sure.
Honor was a bedrock of popular morality throughout the history of the West, especially if we look at only in the English-speaking world since the Renaissance. For example, Shakespeare's plays are full of people who are asserting their honor. A famous passage, Shakespeare's Iago, a man who's actually driven by envy and desire for other people's esteem, expresses what must have been the common sentiment for people of Shakespeare's time. Good name in man and woman is the immediate jewel of their souls. Who steals my purse steals trash to something, nothing. 'Tis mine, 'twas his, and has been slave to thousands. But he that filches from me my good name robs me of that which not enriches him, and makes me poor indeed. 30 years ago, 50 years ago, any schoolboy could quote that little bit of Shakespeare.
Yeah, but that's Shakespeare. What about us ordinary Americans out here in the Midwest?
Well, America held on to certain principles of honor longer than anywhere in the Western world. And I'm referring to dueling for the sake of honor.
Like swords or?
Swords, pistols,
really?
Whatever.
Dueling, yeah. Okay.
The dueling was, I'm writing a chapter right now, two chapters on dueling, and it's a subject I've studied for a long, long time.
Okay.
In America, we were fighting duels in the middle of the 18th century.
Really?
We did it in the middle of the Revolutionary War. Colonel John Lawrence was a young man, 24 years old. His father was president of the Continental Congress, and he was aide to George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Lee had been bad-mouthing Washington, and Lawrence Lawrence challenged him for the honor, because it's the honor of George Washington.
The honor.
And his second was Alexander Hamilton, who would later be killed in a duel.
Oh, boy.
And the last legal duels, or at least publicly sanctioned duels, were probably in the 1890s.
Wow.
But I've seen references to things that looked very much like formal duels much, much later.
Hmm.
In the old days, if you insulted a man in public, in person, or in a letter, or in a newspaper article, he called you out.
Okay.
That he basically said you were a liar and a coward unless you faced him on the field of honor. If a man caught his wife in adultery with another man, he was compelled to kill both of them,
right,
for the sake of his
honor.
There'd
be a lot less of that if we would do some more of dueling.
You bet indeed.
You know, honor is important, but again, we do not hear that word much anymore. How come honor, that word, is almost gone from our language?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. First of all, we're taught in school and in the media and everywhere else that what people say is really not important.
Hmm.
Of course, if what people say is not important, why do we read newspapers? Why do we turn on the TV and watch the news?
Hmm.
But we believe this. So in our society, as opposed to any other known society, a person can cut the fool in public, wear jeans to church, behave abominably, foul mouth, yelling, screaming, degraded, debased. And if you said something to him, man, that's just my thing. Or as we used to say in the late 60s, it's just my bag.
Right.
You know, in other words, behaving badly is my bag.
Yeah.
And people behave abominably. So our heroes today in America are shameless people.
Shameless.
And the football players with their end zone displays in the NFL, or your people, rock and rollers, taking their clothes off and yelling and screaming and rolling around like animals,
no,
imitating various sex actions. You know, animals in the zoo, forget wild animals. Wild animals behave with far greater dignity than Americans do today. But zoo animals are degraded because they're used to being watched through the bars. And our public heroes are like zoo animals. The idea of a gentleman who does not lose his temper, who's self-controlled in public, he doesn't humiliate his inferiors, he doesn't lay his hands on a woman who works for him, and he doesn't insult some kid who's making $200,000 less than he is.
Hmm.
No. We love people who lose their tempers in public. We love celebrities like Hugh Jackass, who threw a cell phone at a desk clerk who couldn't get his way fast enough.
Right.
Or we love women who take their clothes off in front of the camera and imitate or actually carry out fornication. We love women like Katie Couric, who write tell-all memoirs in which she lies about her colleagues and makes herself look good as if nobody could see through the lies into this pathetic, vain person. It's not so much that what these people are doing is immoral, which
well,
it is.
Yeah.
It is immoral.
Yeah.
But that they're doing things that used to make people ashamed. I'll give you a good example. Romans would expose their babies if they felt they couldn't afford to rear them, and they would hope somebody would pick the baby up. But they had a sense of shame which prevented them from ever admitting that they had an abortion.
Oh, I see.
Now, we celebrate women who murder their babies, the most, not only immoral, but the most disgusting thing you could imagine. The most perverse way of interfering in the operation of nature. You murder something that you've given birth to. Oh, they're moral heroes they had the courage to do what they wanted
to do. Well, I'm not going to argue with you that all this stuff is going on, and I'm not going to argue that it's not immoral. It is immoral, but I have a little bit of hope in my heart that there is a way for a man to be honorable. Maybe not grandiose it'd be nice if the President of the United States was honorable. I'm questionable there. But I think honor is still there, but you make it sound like it's absolutely gone.
It's not entirely gone because it's like the desire to get married. It's like, for example, brave men, if they're attacked on the street, some of them pull a knife or a gun or just use their fists and fight off the attacker.
Yeah.
This happens. A recent book by a man, I think his name is Victor Kieran. It's not a very good book on honor, but he points out that people today wouldn't use the word, but they often, in their actions, acknowledge the thing itself. Like, for example, if somebody attacks your character, you hire a lawyer and sue him.
Oh, I see, yeah. Okay.
When they've been defamed, they people do
so
take...
there's some honor there,
people
yeah.
People take steps to preserve their public reputation. I always thought it was wrong to go after Bill Clinton because of Monica Lewinsky. After all, she was complicit in this. She was chasing him, and she was not a sweet little virgin at this point. She'd had many affairs already, and she just wanted to bag herself a celebrity president.
Right.
But whatever else. But the point is, once the Republicans made this an issue of, what's a man with a wife and daughter supposed to do? He said, yes, I did it. I did it. Yes, sure, I did it. And I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a man has to lie under those circumstances. And then to say we're going to impeach him because he lied about something where a man had. Now, it would be much better if he hadn't done the deed.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the implication of the Republicans is that there, of course, you would have to tell the truth about this. Honor is our sense of personal worth, especially as that worth is measured by other people of respect. It's a main theme in all Western literature and politics. In Homer, the Iliad plot turns on Achilles' wounded dignity because this concubine has been taken from him. And he says, oh, my geras, my prize of honor is being stripped of me. And he's willing to destroy the whole Greek army full of his comrades because he has lost his honor.
Well, he was concerned what all the rest of the soldiers would do or think of him if, in fact, he let this go.
That's right.
Right. So, I see. I didn't look at it like that before.
It's interesting. The Greek word for honor, timē, it's not used much in Homer, but timē, it means price or value or worth. And so your price, your value in society is your reputation. It's what people agree. It's why people give way or bow in your presence. It's why you get public offices. There's a brilliant passage in the Iliad where Sarpedon tells his friend Glaucus, we have to go and fight in the forefront. Why? Because when we're at home, among our own people, we sit at the head of the banquet table. Mm. We are given all the best things. We are given respect and honor. And to deserve that, we have to be foremost
responsibility
in the battle.
Yeah.
Rome is even more full of these stories than the Greeks are. And there's the famous story of Coriolanus, who, because his honor was abused, he was a great general, and he left Rome and fought for the enemy.
Oh.
In American history, we have the duels of Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr, John Lawrence and Charles Lee.
Mm-hmm,
Andrew Jackson fought so many duels that you can't really count them all. And in coming down to modern times, there are a lot of Clint Eastwood movies. If we even go before Clint Eastwood, a movie like High Noon, Gary Cooper as the marshal, everybody wants him to go. It'll be safer if he leaves town and does not face death at the hands of these villains. He's been protecting these people. He has a duty to perform and his honor to maintain. Something like Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven, where a lot of it, the women who are beaten have a sense of honor. The cowboy who did it has a sense of honor because he's been ridiculed for his lack of manliness.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Clint Eastwood's black partner is not only killed, but his body is dishonored by displaying it in public, he has to get revenge. And of course, we're full of revenge flicks. I mean, this is one of the most common kinds of movies, and some of them are just awful and bloody and nasty, but they're still appealing to this basic thing. But to go onto the political level, what was the second Gulf War except George Bush II's attempt to redeem the honor and reputation of George Bush I?
Hmm.
And right now, one of the big political conflicts is that the French are very angry because in the middle of negotiations where they thought they were going to be supplying some submarine stuff, Biden pulled the rug out from under them. And it's not only that they lost money, but he showed no respect.
Hmm.
Then, of course, there's Donald Trump's vendetta against anyone who has betrayed him over the years, and but also Trump's former people who worked for him. Half the people who Trump fired or got rid of are now writing revenge memoirs because they felt dishonored by his rude behavior.
So nothing has changed in all these years and years and years.
Well, a lot has changed in the sense that people, it used to be not just we want our respect, we want people to respect us, but we want to be worthy of respect.
Right.
In other words, the notion of a gentleman defending his honor. Now, even though you're right and I'm wrong, but you crossed me and you made me look bad, so I'm going to get even. Liars, cheats, and traitors act like they have a sense of honor to defend, and their lives will depend upon defending their sense of honor. But once upon a time, just ordinary people, like the people in my neighborhood, took care that their conduct was above reproach.
Right.
It had to be consistent with the standards of morals and manners that we had inherited from generation after generation of our ancestors going back 1,000 years.
I think some of that's still alive. We try to be as moral and as good and honorable as we possibly can. It's out there still. If nothing else, I see you as an honorable man, and I'm trying to be an honorable man. Isn't that half the battle?
That is certainly happening, and it is certainly true. Much of the disgust of ordinary Americans with their with our political and entertainment and media elite is precisely that these people have no standards. And but in the upper ranks of society, what's the point of being a celebrity? It's being able to do what you want and never having to apologize.
Oh, boy.
And maybe you throw a handful of $100 bills at somebody you have abused. Our standards are collapsing all around us, and what we have in the public eye are spoiled brats. When these people feel humiliated, often quite justly humiliated for their misdeeds, they retaliate like children. These standards, yes, are collapsing all around us, and what we have in the public eye, in the media, in Hollywood, in the big financiers who cheat like maniacs, in our political class. These are people who, when they do stub their toe and get humiliated, often quite justly for the crimes and misdeeds that they have, that they're responsible for, they retaliate like spoiled children. At the kind of kids who 100 years ago or 150 years ago, if they got into a little scrape with a neighborhood child, they would sing a very popular song, which from the 1890s. I learned it in the 1950s. I wonder if anybody remembers it. I'll recite the lyric. I don't want to play in your yard. I don't like you anymore. You'll be sorry when you see me sliding down our cellar door. You can't holler down our rain barrel. You can't climb our apple tree. I don't want to play in your yard if you can't be good to me.
I don't wanna play in your yard. I don't like you anymore. You'll be sorry when you see me sliding down our cellar door. You can't holler down our rain barrel. You can't climb our apple tree. I don't wanna play in your yard if you can't be good to me.
This was a presentation of the Fleming Foundation.